Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, joined alongside me, Whitney Wright. Whitney, we had a little bit of a, we didn't have time off, really, and our listeners won't have missed an episode, thanks to our great producer, Manny, here. So, welcome back.
That's true.
And yeah, after no delay.
How was your fourth?
It was really good. Yeah, first time I've ever seen fireworks, like on the 4th of July as a part of a display in California. A lot of times I'm driving home.
Have you lived there like 10 years?
Yeah, but it's like, it's so different in Missouri because in Missouri, it's like if any of our listeners are from the Midwest, like you'll get it. Fireworks are a thing. You can buy them on the interstate year round. But in California, it's like, it's a big risk for fires. So they do them out over the ocean and it's always pretty tough to get there. But we live close enough that we could see it now. And we walked over there and I was pretty disappointed.
Oh, they weren't what you had hoped for?
They're pretty lame, to be honest.
Oh, that's a bummer.
By comparison, in the Midwest, where it's like every municipality, even the small towns, drop like $1 million on fireworks every year.
Yes. Actually, so there's a bunch of lakes where I live right now in Indiana. And the lake that my brother-in-law, his family, and like where he grew up, they had them the same night that we were watching ours on our lake. But apparently the barge caught on fire like 12 minutes into the fireworks. And so like fireworks were like shooting off in a bunch of different directions. And
I was literally when I came into the office this morning, I was telling everyone about how like at least once a year a barge blows up and somebody shoots off all the fireworks at once. So, yeah.
Yes.
True Midwesterners.
Yeah, it's all computerized, or, you know, like no one was on the barge, luckily, and the fire department was able to put it out. But barge caught on fire like 10 minutes into the show and they were just going off everywhere. And, you know, thousands of dollars just down the drain.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that's probably the most depressing to me now as an adult. And that's how I know I'm getting older is like anytime my wife and I were walking down, she's like, oh, I'm excited to see them. And I'm like, you know, it's a shame that all those tax dollars go to fireworks. And it's like, oh my God, who am I?
And you've become a 65-year-old man just bunkering down at home.
The transition happened fast.
Yeah, truly. Well, something new that's happening on the internet, I think it officially released today, is Threads by Meta. I initially was like, I'm not doing that. And then I saw a couple of my friends got it. I was like, okay, fine, I'll try it out.
Did you get a Threads account? Peer pressured into a new social media.
No one asked me to do it. Like, no one was like, you have to do it. I just like saw my friends doing it and I was like, okay, fine, I'll try it.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is actually a topic I've talked about quite a bit just with friends and media contacts that have reached out just asking about other questions, and they were asking my opinion about it. And I always preface anything on this front as I've been pretty good about predicting just about everything in the technology and media space over the last probably 5 or 6 years. But social media, since we can go back 20 years, I've been terrible at predicting sort of like a lot of the different trends and things like that. So take everything that I'm about to say with a grain of salt. But I think that it's going to be very irrelevant quite soon. And there's a couple caveats to that, but I'm interested in your initial thoughts on, I haven't even used it yet. I haven't downloaded it.
I sent you can't even say tweet. I don't know what you call it. I sent a thread. And it was basically just to say that I saw my friends getting it, and so I decided to get it, and that's the only thing I've said. It's pretty integrated. You get it through Instagram. Like, you get a Threads account. It's your Instagram account. And I actually saw online that you, in order to delete your Threads account, you have to delete your Instagram account. So they lock you in once you get it.
Oh, well, that makes a lot more sense. So two things. One is it's Meta, which is, you know, everybody knows this, Facebook. But in the App Store, Threads says Threads, by Instagram. Mm-hmm. And it shows you a lot about like how they understand their brand to be perceived and who they're targeting. But the other thing I think is really interesting, and I think it's a big mistake, is they're obviously all the PR and all the sort of marketing they're doing around it right now is all around the number of users that are online, that are downloading it. Oh, 10 million downloads. But the thing you just mentioned, I think Maybe the general populace doesn't know, but I think people in our space definitely understand that those numbers are going to get inflated through things like what you mentioned, where it's like you have to delete an Instagram account to get rid of it and things like that.
Yeah, it looks a lot like Twitter. I mean, how else can you make a kind of Twitter-esque thing other than it looking like Twitter? But it is very integrated into Instagram, and you can like there's a direct like thing that you can click and add it to your Instagram story, you know. And so they're really leaning hard on Instagram. They know that that's their golden child right now is Instagram. So
and I find it a little bit curious as to like why they didn't just build it into Instagram as like a separate section. I'm sure it was discussed, but yeah, that it boggles my mind just because it seems like they're trying to use their existing platform to build a second platform. And I get that Twitter is a different thing from Instagram. That's mm-hmm. why it's still around, is like, you know, the reason why it didn't get MySpace and like go out of vogue in the way that, you know, a lot of social media like popular trends have gone is because mm-hmm. it delivers something that the others don't. And I sort of think that that's the key here. I don't know that I think Facebook strategy is a very old one, although it appears to work on you, my good friend, where it's like, you know, my friends are all using it, everybody's using it, I better get this. But like, I'm still skeptical that, like, you know, do you believe that you'll sustain use of Threads or not?
I don't know. I think there's something very there's something about Twitter that I like, and I think it's because it's like it is a little crazy on Twitter. And I don't know.
I like Twitter as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if Threads will have that same kind of unhinged behavior that I enjoy about Twitter, including, like, I'll throw out stuff on Twitter, just, like, random thoughts I have. No one really looks at my Twitter because I don't have very many followers, but it's not really for them, it's for me. And so I don't know if Threads going to have that pull for me personally, the same way that Twitter does, but I don't know. I'll try it out. You know, I'm willing.
Yeah, I know, I'm with you. It's like my Twitter is definitely something, you know, my wife always says, oh, he uses it professionally, which I don't use it at all right now. I still can't get into my account. Go back to the past episode. If anybody can get a hold of somebody at Twitter, I would love that. But the big thing is like, it's not, though. It's like I have people that follow me because of both this show and then, you know, like just sort of my position in this space. And they follow mm-hmm. me for, you know, that kind of news, information, that sort of thing. But I also just use it to shout into the darkness sometimes, you know, yes, like you said, exactly. Where it's just like, this is just an opinion or thought I have. It's either silly or opinionated or whatever, but it's not for anybody. This is just like, wire attack style, just go to fireworks into the darkness, you know, go.
That's a great tweet that you could be doing if someone at Twitter would let you back in.
I know. I had an old phone that I'm like, I'm going to call T-Mobile and be like, can I get my old phone back? Because there may be a two-factor authentication key on it that I desperately need.
Oh, but there's something. Well, Elon's busy getting ready for his fight with Mark Zuckerberg, so.
I know. I have a lot of strong opinions about that, too, as a black belt in jiu-jitsu. But
if only you could tweet.
I know, if only. Oh, my God. It's the how ironic.
Maybe
I'll have to get Threads.
You might, if you want to shout into the void and you're missing that, you're missing that from your life, you might have to get Threads. Well, today we are talking about AI a little bit, and then there is a Google thing again. I'm not picking on Google. I don't make the news. I just report it. So, you know, just something came up with privacy in Google. So, with Sweden. So we're going to get
strange.
Into that. I know it's a part of GDPP, GDPR,
GDPR,
CP. I don't remember. So anyway, we've talked a little bit about this in the podcast, but there's, you know, concern, you know, is AI going to replace search engines? And this article from What's New in Publishing is talking about that it has the potential to maybe replace search engines, which causes concern among publishers. And publishers rely heavily on search as a referral source, with 35% of news publisher traffic coming from search engines. And basically, this article is saying that publishers need to prepare for a world without search by reducing reliance on search traffic and building you know, audience relationships. And so I guess I wanted to get your opinion on that. I know we've kind of talked about like search engines and AI are going to be different and they're going to be used in different ways, but do you see search, for people that may have missed previous episodes where we touched on this, do you see search disappearing in, you know, the next 20 years?
Depends on in the way that, I mean, 20 years for sure. But yeah. not because, it depends on how you want to define it, right? Because the way a search engine works today is going to be different in a year. It'll be dramatically different, I believe. But that doesn't necessarily mean that for publishers that like the business goes under. In the same way that it's like, you know, if you were in the quote unquote content business, you made content, you know, 100 years ago even, it's like that business is still here. It's actually better. It's growing. It's been growing for 100 years, and this space is no different. Now, are the majority of your customers going to, you know, like in the same way now, it's like in retail, it's like, do the majority of customers walk into a brick and mortar store and buy something? No. But they still buy the same types of things from a lot of the same retailers. They just do it online. And I see this being a really similar type of situation, because I think we're talking, I see articles like this, and I see these discussions, and actually, I agree with this. It's like, obviously you want to build your own audience. If you haven't listened to the show long enough for, you know, some of the different types of things that we've talked about on here, this is obviously something that, you know, I think every publisher should be a proponent of. You want to build those audiences, but you need to be in a place where it's like, you can market your content. So marketing content looks like, you know, going into forums and communities, different places like that, finding your audience and creating content for them, having some way of distributing it to them. But search is a great distribution channel right now, because it allows you to be discovered outside of any other marketing other than making quote unquote good content. So I do think that the benefit of this for publishers is you can stop wasting so much time on these like niche little SEO things that probably don't matter at all. Like, I saw somebody the other day that was like, we're selling backlinks, and like, you, they were like, you know, some kind of backlink affiliate or something. But I was just like, oh my God, like, why are people wasting their time on this right now? Like, you could be producing so many articles in the time it takes like to waste your time on that. And so the way that I look at it is, basically, you need to be making good content. You need to know where people are finding it, and you need to be in tune with your audience. And I think if you're a publisher right now that you see everything is in the world the color of SEO and, you know, getting traffic through that, and then also just trying to crank out niche content to make money, I think you're going to probably be very sorely disrupted and disappointed by what the future holds, because I do think it's going to be a lot more work in terms of knowing what content to make, what information to include, and then also being able to like keep your finger on that pulse, because we're going to need content. People might not need to write all of it or most of it, but we are going to need to know sort of like the supply and the demand. And I think that that's something that publishers maybe have atrophied on over the last maybe 10 years with Google search.
Well, you mentioned backlinks, kind of, especially purchasing backlinks, being kind of obsolete, definitely in the near future. Is there anything else kind of that have been digital publishing tricks in the past that just are quickly fading out here?
I would say like a lot of the same principles that are embedded in SEO are actually good ones, because they are designed around sort of like trying to create quote unquote the best content. The thing that I would sort of separate your like mind from is like, focus more on that and less of sort of this is SEO, doing SEO things or making decisions or spending a lot of time on tasks that are solely designed so that you can rank in Google search engine. Now, there's some things that, I mean, Google's not going away anytime soon. And in fact, like, they may remain the dominant player in this space. It just may look different in like 5 years. So you're still going to get the majority of your traffic from there, I think, for the foreseeable future. But, you know, I think that's a lot murkier than it was before. But I would really start saying to yourself, am I spending my time doing things that are basically not creating content, understanding what content it is my audience wants, and then finding ways to connect with my audience so that, like, you know, they're endeared to my like brand or my content so that they want to keep coming back. You may just have no connection where it's like you just people come to you for specific types of information. Well, it's like, how can I establish myself as the authority or the like the spot for this in this space? And, you know, maybe it's like building partnerships. Like I would think like a business, not like somebody that's, you know, trying to SEO optimize a website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense. Well, segue into content. This article is talking about why using AI to write content won't guarantee success in Google search rankings. This is an article about how, you know, the world of SEO, and we were just talking about this, has changed so much last year to this year, including Google's helpful content update and then, you know, OpenAI with ChatGPT. And so Google earlier this year clarified, you know, their position on AI written content, that it's okay as long as it's, you know,
well, they have no highlighting choice, the importance they can't of, tell the difference.
Right. High quality content, even if it's, you know, created by machines versus humans. And Google's algorithm focuses on intention, and content creators should aim to provide original, valuable content. So you can still use AI. It's, you know, this article was talking about, you can still use AI to write content or to help you write content, but you shouldn't just be using it to write content and throwing it out on the internet. It's, you know, really important to integrate the creative process, you know, the quality of content, making sure the intention behind it is that you're providing expertise and experience, you know, authoritativeness, trustworthiness, and using AI as a tool and not just as, you know, I guess something that can make you make it so you don't have to do any work.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the sentiment is right. I think you can put a hard stop after Google said, don't just have it create content and throw it on the internet. And I would tell you that not because, you know, like rankings, Google, blah, blah, blah. I would tell you that because it's just not going to work. It's going to be a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Like everybody can do it. So it's a commodity. The information right. is out there. You know, like there's no value provided. So yeah, you could try it. But my guess is you're actually spend way more time, like wasting your time on something like that. That's going to not be fruitful. Even if you got lucky and you made, you know, like got something that actually did rank for some period of time, like mm-hmm. it's not going to very long, like not if it's, you know, meaningful, because somebody will come along and make better content for that. The biggest thing here is that AI can write content. It can write content really, mm-hmm. really well. The problem, and it has access to more information than any human in existence. So it's going to be able to do this job. Now, here's the problem is the content that it's pulling from and all the information that it has already exists. Mm-hmm. It already exists. It's out there. And if you extrapolate, you know, this sort of like thinking around, all right, so is AI going to write all content on the internet? Well, it might, but even if it writes all the content, like it's in the same way that, you know, like if you're an author of a book and somebody is maybe like your writer, you might just, you know, semantically tell them what it is you want to write about, and then they may write it and you proof it and edit it or whatever. It doesn't mean that like your job has been taken by the writer. No, like they're transcribing your knowledge into content. And I think mm-hmm. that's one of the things that as a publisher is really exciting to me. As I look at basically, you know, when I create content, do I enjoy writing, actually typing it all out? Sometimes it might just be a little bit relaxing to type something, but that's like if it's, you know, something that I'm really interested in, I want to get my exact point across. Sometimes if I'm just writing content, I want to get the information out there, and the time that I have to take to actually type it is not the best. I've been practicing with like doing dictation to ChatGPT and having it write articles. It's really good at that. But the value that I could provide somebody that wants to read my content is the information that I have that nobody else does, or my ability to organize this content and then have something else create it for me. To me, as a publisher, I would worry very little about whether or not AI is writing your content. To me, it's like, should you be using a CMS, or do you want to write all of your, you know, articles inside of Microsoft Word and then format them as HTML and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you'd much rather just chuck them into something that, you know, spits it back out onto a page so it's more efficient. I'd rather do that with AI as a tool as well. So I think every publisher should probably be using it right now. That said, you should be using it to help you, not necessarily take away. It can't do the job that you need to do the creative process, the information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of reminds me, I know you've mentioned at least like the best publishers are those who are creating new niche content. If you're just writing stuff that's already on the internet, just to try to rank, you're not going to rank and you're not going to do well because it's already out there. And that's what I think a lot of AI does. Like you said, it's pulling from what's already out there. So it's not going to be creative or unique. It's just going to be, it's going to write a good paragraph, but it's going to be writing on stuff that's probably already out there. And it's usually not hype, very specific. And obviously not from experience. And so I think
the publishers that I've seen had the most success on stuff like that are really the passionate ones, you know, like the ones that don't actually know anything. And they'll say that they're accidentally successful, but it's because they're just passionate about a topic and they start writing about it. And the reason why it becomes popular is because they're writing the content that didn't exist. So like they're a member of the, you know, jiu-jitsu community, and they have like a strong opinion about Zuckerberg versus Musk, and they break down why it is that if Elon Musk has never trained before a day in his life, Mark Zuckerberg having trained for a couple years, it's like that he's not going to close that gap. There's no way Zuckerberg is going to have way better jiu-jitsu. But like, how many people know that? And then also, like, that's a topic that, you know, people are interested in popular wise, and then maybe also within the space. So it's like, yeah, it's like that's a really unique perspective that someone might have that they want to write about. And yeah, it's, you know, that people are interested because you're plugged into it. But
yeah,
without that sort of like perspective, you know, like anybody could just write that article, but they would all be the same except for the one written by the person with the unique knowledge and perspective.
So you're saying that generative AI is not passionate about anything?
I don't know if you could ask it and find out. I do know that whenever I ask it questions like that, I get, it doesn't give me the answers that I want. But if I ask Dolly to tell me what it fears the most, I always get pictures of children, which I find so strange.
That's weird. I don't like that.
Yeah. Always children crying.
Okay. Well, maybe I have.
It does it every time.
Hi, my name is Jeff. I'm the Global Director of Publisher Success at eZilliq, and I'm here to tell you what's new with the Support Dashboard. The Support Dashboard makes it quick and easy to help you find answers to questions that you may have and get you back to creating content very quickly. The new layout is designed to increase accessibility. You have access to any of your open tickets, you can contact our live chat agents, and you have direct access to the knowledge base for any of your questions. We've also implemented a light mode and a dark mode for your visual preferences. Additionally, you'll be able to register for any of our upcoming webinars right from your dashboard. You'll be able to view any past webinars, the latest news and releases, and access to our blog, all without needing to be logged in. If you still didn't find what you're looking for, you can suggest an article, review our development docs, or submit feedback. Be sure to check out the new Support Dashboard by using the link in the description.
Well, our last topic is that the Swedish Authority for Privacy Protection fines Google Analytics in violation of GDPR. So I think it's just IMY. I don't think it's like any, but I'm going to say IMY. They have warned against using Google Analytics due to surveillance risks posed by the U.S. government. And they found that GA is violating GDPR by transferring data to the U.S. where privacy laws are weaker and intelligence agencies can access the information. They have investigated 4 different Swedish companies and either fined them or told them to stop using Google Analytics. Currently, the EU and US policymakers are working on a new data transfer pack to replace the invalidated privacy shield, which I had never heard of before. But these changes may be needed for analytics and ad models that rely freely, you know, moving on personal data. And Google had said, this is a direct quote from them, "People want the websites they visit to be well-designed, easy to use, and respectful of their privacy. Google Analytics helps publishers understand how well their sites and apps are working for their visitors, but not by identifying individuals or tracking them across the web. These organizations, not Google, control what data is collected with these tools and how it is used."
Yeah, I mean, it's true. In the same way, manufacturers aren't responsible for, you know, like what somebody would do with a gun. I get that argument.
Yes.
And Google's not wrong necessarily here, but it's, you know, like we could pick this example, But Google's a lot guiltier, actually, than the gun manufacturers in this case, because the way that their tools all integrate with each other in the Google suite, and by the way, this little browser called Chrome, it makes it so that you start to get these, like Google has all this data. They sort of lock you into an ecosystem, which really is, it's difficult to not collect your user data. And then also as a user, not have your data collected and to still be able to like successfully use the products like anywhere close to their like full potential. So that aside, this is actually why Threads didn't launch in, I believe, Ireland and the UK today, is because there's currently still, they won't list it in the App Store, or they won't allow it to be used in those countries because of sending the data back across to the United States. And it's this exact law. It's interesting. I just read about it last night. But the biggest thing that I look at with this is, I think we've talked about this before, but you know, when you see laws like this, especially ones that just work really clunky, like this, it's very hard to regulate this space without any knowledge. And the EU specifically has kind of hopped into some of these things haphazardly, GDPR included. But that just tells you that they're not actually interested in regulating it or preventing it, because it is preventable to some degree. You could be really draconian if you wanted to, if you saw it as a huge problem. The biggest thing here is it's collecting tax dollars, especially the EU, where you have these American-based tech companies, and you know, like they're not necessarily paying the same, you know, like windfall in terms of like state revenue that they are here in the States. It allows you to sort of like kind of get some of that back, and that's why you see all these things resulting in fines and no real true like selling of assets across and you know, breaking up companies and products and things like that, because they're not dictating, like Google will not have, like Google Analytics cannot be, you know, like something that's on a website unless a user consents or something like that. There won't be anything right. like that. It'll be a fine.
Yeah, I just, privacy, like you said, is so hard because it varies, you know, country to country, or like, you know, the EU versus the United States. And like I
and what
was
is
saying,
it?
I'm not...
Like, what is it?
What's what?
What's privacy?
Oh, who knows?
that's what I mean. It's like they define
it. I think it's
different
for everyone.
Like,
yeah.
Is that an IP address is what they're most concerned about right now. Yeah. And then, you know, with GDPR, it's like this idea that there's something that could be done by tracking you that would allow a third party to identify you or you. So with your IP address and all the other information, I could reasonably suspect that it was you that visited my site. But, you know, realistically, unless you're basically a government organization that's trying to track a criminal, like what motivation does somebody have to like actually track down a user outside of something like advertising? I mean, you're going to get into some very bizarre edge cases that I think are true, and which case I think all humans would basically just be like, that's fine. I'm willing to like give up that amount of privacy to have like a far more convenient, personalized and tailored internet and like user experience. And the people that, and then forcing all the people that want, you know, nobody to be able to ever identify that they visit a certain website or something like that to be, you know, have to opt in for additional privacy. That's how people use Chrome today. It's like you go to incognito mode if you don't want your, you know, browser cookied. But the problem with this is that when you hear the word privacy, I think people have these other ideas of what that means. Like ask somebody on the street, like, what does data privacy mean to you? And they will not tell you it's, you know, somebody could tell that I potentially visit a website if they stitch together all the information or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So like I kind of mentioned initially at the beginning of the podcast, it seems like Google is just under fire lately. Am I just like, maybe I've just been like oblivious all this time, but I feel like a lot of people have just been picking on Google lately. And I don't know if it's, you know, this kind of like, not a trend, but like, it's like, oh, Google's finally, you know, getting exposed or whatever that means. And so, you know, now's the time to strike. Or like, do you have any opinions on like why Google suddenly is like getting all of these kind of lawsuits and pinged for certain things?
Well, I think some of it's been in the, you know, like some of this stuff is new, but most of the things, they've just been the wheels of justice turned slowly. So like a lot of these things are cases that were brought, you know, a year or two ago. And they're finally starting, like there's momentum building and whatnot.
Yeah. But, yeah. So it's all coming to a head at one time, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think it's,
I feel like there's a new thing.
I feel like a lot of these are because they are sort of like they are interrelated. And I do think that, you know, some of these things have to be may have to be ruled on by something like, you know, the Supreme Court or, you know, like, yeah, some of these like various courts across the country that are favorable to different parties. And it makes it to where it sort of like they have to combine these cases. They sort of have to negotiate with themselves around like, you know, which are we going to combine these cases? Is this going to be this ruling is going to depend partially on what's ruled in this case. So you are starting to get these things stacked up because now sort of the dominoes are starting to fall. It just so happens it happens at a time that, you know, everything in the web is changing. And so you're also looking closely at like, how does the system work today? And I think, you know, to be honest, I think that there's a lot of people that are, you know, trying to break into, you know, like this industry with the thoughts of like, there's disruption happening, there's opportunity, but then you're looking at it and you're going, whoa, wait, how does this work today? Like, this doesn't seem right. So I do think it's a lot of new eyes on an industry that's very old and cynical.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Well, anything else you've seen in the news or anything else you wanted to comment on?
No, I think we touched on just about everything. You do such a good job like breaking down all the different topics that have occurred over the last week, because these were all the things that I was thinking of kind of top of mind. I would say this, you know, the space is changing a lot. And I think that for our audience specifically, my advice would be that balance is really key. Your business is not gone today. It's not gone tomorrow. It's changing and we don't know how fast or even what's going to change. So you need to keep your business operations going especially if you've been growing and have success. That said, you need to be adding new tools. And I would say now is the time to be experimenting and also setting aside time to be able to sort of innovate. Like, what are new ideas? What are things that, you know, maybe are trends that are coming up? You can waste some time on that stuff. I would encourage you waste that time, but don't, but keep your mind flexible around what you could imagine would happen, or don't extrapolate out too far on sort of like how you imagine things could happen, because even if you're right, you can be wrong sometimes. And I think that that's probably the key thing that I've been talking to, at least our customers about here recently. I've been doing a lot of calls, and especially the larger ones. And it's very interesting sort of, just all over the map in terms of concern, worry, confidence. So I guess our audience is probably in the same boat.
Yeah, exactly. What shoes do you have on today for our listeners?
Oh, these are Air Max 90s.
Nice.
If you can see, yeah.
Very cool. We had someone on YouTube comment that they enjoyed your shoes, so.
I know. And now, you know what? I told my wife it's a great excuse for me to have to, like, just get a new pair every time we do a podcast, you know, once
there
a week.
There you go. Oh, darn, I have to buy more shoes.
Yeah.
Well, this, you know, you can find us on YouTube. We have this as a YouTube podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts. We're on publisherlab.org. If you would like to leave us, you know, something that you want us to talk about or a comment, we have a place on the publisherlab.org that you can do that, or you can leave us a YouTube comment. We check that frequently. And it's been a good episode. This has been another episode of the Publisher Lab.